This episode of Guitar Radio Show is brought to you in part by
More Mids, More Growl, More Bite, Nico's USA Hot 60s Tele Pickups, only from Nico's USA. Go to Nico's USA Pickups.
Welcome to Guitar Radio Show, the show dedicated to the guitar player, guitar maker, gear builder, and purveyors of such items that you may not know about, but should. Here's your host, Mark Davin.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode 126 of Guitar Radio Show. Hey, we are psyched for today. This is a guy that I've wanted to have on the show. He's been on my wish list of people to talk to for a long time. He's formerly of the Black Crowes, but I'm a huge fan of his solo work. That's the stuff that really does it for me. Mr. Mark Ford is on the show today. I recently got to see him here in Austin playing at a great little place called Lambert's, which is in the 2nd Street District here in Austin. It's a historic building. Really cool restaurant upstairs. It's this great club. Really great. He was amazing. It's amazing what the man can do with a guitar with a P90 and a Blues Junior. Just mind-blowing what this cat can do. So we got a great conversation with him about his past, his present, his future, gear, and philosophy on music and guitar. So that's, you're in for a really great conversation with this guy. Folks, guitarradioshow.com, guitarradioshow@gmail.com. Want to remind you that we've got a couple of giveaways coming up. We just completed the giveaway with Nico's Pickups over at nicosusapickups.com. And thank you so much for doing that giveaway with us. That was fantastic. And we will be letting you know about the person who won those Hot 60s Tele Pickups. Like my voice today? I'm recording this early in the morning, so that's what it sounds like. Thank you very much. We've got some other cool giveaways coming up real soon. We've got checkered pedals, a really cool phaser that is like the 70s wrapped in a box, and we've got a really cool overdrive pedal for Mr. Adam Lopez, who has two new records out, and we're going to be doing a lot of stuff with Adam. Matter of fact, he's going to be in our part of our next episode, Mr. Adam Lopez. So get prepared for that. In the meantime, I also wanted to remind you that this week, tomorrow, Thursday, this episode comes out every Wednesday, new episode, and every other Thursday we have 500 words from Mr. Adam P. Hunt, and this week it is 500 words on Moss Wright Guitars, another guitar company that I really wasn't, you know, plugged into. I remember seeing the ads in GP and everything else growing up, but never really paid much attention to it. And then Adam said, you know, check this out, man. This was legit. And so he's got some really cool info on that. And you'll be able to see that at guitarradioshow.com. All right, that's it for info. Let's get into it. What do you say? Here's a little bit of Mark Ford, and then we get into the interview with him. Ready? Guitar Radio Show, guitarradioshow.com. We'll be right back. All right, folks, many of you know who listen to this show on a regular basis know that I had a wish list when I first started the show 5 years ago, that I had a wish list of people that I wanted on the show. And I was going to hold off on those people until I got to a place where the show would reach enough people so I could do justice by the list of folks I wanted on the show. And this is one of those guys. Mark Ford, welcome to Guitar Radio Show. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Good, I'm glad to have you here.
Thank you.
You grew up in L.A., right?
Yeah, a little south of there, on the edge of L.A. County.
So,
Long Beach, basically.
Okay, so not quite Orange County then, right?
No, but I married in there.
What do you think living there had any, if any, effect on your style and playing? I'm always curious about that.
I think even though it was a very sort of, you know, Caucasian, suburban environment, I think that there was culture out there. I just hadn't met it yet. But now looking back, music is very regional.
Yeah.
As it is sort of a worldwide reaching. It's both things, And the West Coast has always had a sound to it because there's a feeling on the West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you just sort of become, a real musician just sort of plays who he is and, where you live and your daily life definitely affects the music that you make.
Yeah. Was there anybody in particular that you heard and you said, well, I want to go play guitar?
Well, like I said, back then I didn't know the difference between, West Coast. But for sure there was, when I was, really, really young, Peter Frampton just comes alive, came out, and that was a great picture to stare at. I was in the Elton John pretty heavily, so I wasn't really known for guitar stuff.
Yeah, I had heard that.
It was great guitar playing.
Yeah, I had heard that about that you were into Elton John and Davy Johnstone was an influence in a way. That's kind of interesting because he had to be
just because I listened so hard for a while.
Uh-huh.
I was pretty young, but I loved the old record.
Yeah.
So I'm sure it influenced me about me being conscious of it.
It's interesting because he was a bit of a minimalist. I think he had to be in that band.
Yeah. They were all supporting the song.
Yeah, it was all about the song. There was nothing, nobody, with the exception of on Captain Fantastic, he stretches out on that little solo on Tower of Babel,
Yeah.
Which is still, it's one of those solos that you can hum, you can sing. So that's a good solo.
Musical.
Totally. So it was from that point, after hearing Elton John type stuff, that you said, I'm going to pick up the guitar and play?
Not necessarily. I don't really remember I think that I got the records first. That would make sense. And then I just saw an old guy selling one at a swap meet that I would go to with my grandmother for antiques. And, he looked like he was having the best time I've ever seen anybody have.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, I want that, give me that. And so I got an $8 guitar and off I went.
Well, that's cool. And it was right away, just woodshedding or right away starting to play with other people, or?
Oh, yeah. Well, I had an elementary school teacher, and at recess, he would play guitar.
Uh-huh.
he was a really cool teacher. And I just became fascinated. I had to hang out with him every recess. So that's what really got me looking at guitars, And then he taught a class for, like, housewives at night once a week. And he let me go in there and learn, you know, Oh My Darling and Clementine and, you know, songs of the day and just strumming along. And I picked it up pretty fast, and it was seemed to be easier for me than most. And then, you know, as I grew up, there was, you know, the guys I hung around with were like metal, but like it was Iron Maiden, the first record, and Judas Priest and Black Sabbath, and it, you know, it was pretty dark, you know. Most of them are in jail now. And then a buddy of mine sat me down in front of his dad's incredible sound system, and Laserdisc had just come out. And he sat me down and turned up this incredible system and goes, check this out. And he put on Band of Gypsies. And it just ripped the top of my head off, you know. Like, you know, I didn't know that was allowed. You know what I mean? Like... that turned it all around, you know. Yeah. I was into Death Back, you know, and his first two solo records. But then when I heard that Band of Gypsies, it was just like, it was totally otherworldly.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, it's funny. I was talking to somebody about that record just the other day, and they were telling me that they used to only be able to listen to it in bits and pieces because it was so hard to digest the enormousness of it, if that's a word. They said it was just too much for them. And I have to say that too. I mean, I didn't understand him properly until I was in my late 20s. I couldn't, my palate hadn't been developed. So I didn't get it in the same way.
Yeah.
Now it's like food.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, last few years, I've just really, I think I just needed a period away from music. I didn't really want to listen to it. I played it now and then, and it just, you know, like, it sort of lost interest and took a back seat for a while. And then all of a sudden, 6 months ago, when I just started really getting excited about music again, and then in goes Jimi Hendrix first thing in my car, and I'm having a good time listening to music again. And so I think Jimi Hendrix is kind of like the place I keep going back to for inspiration. Because even the same old licks just seem to be brand new every time you go back.
Well, I think because
he was working on a whole other level.
Yeah, and it was, I think there was a spirit. He
absolutely.
You know, he tapped into, and he really, he was one of those guys that really loved what he was doing. You know, I mean, I heard stories that even when he was cooking eggs, he had a guitar around his neck. So
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I mean, I know that. You know, you wear it around the house. You know, because you're playing it all the time, and so you know, you go to the bathroom, you do whatever you can with the guitar.
Yeah. You know, it's funny.
You gotta practice.
Go ahead.
Practice your dance too.
Yeah. So was I mean, obviously you had done cover bands probably before Burning Tree, right?
No.
Really? So Burning Tree was like the first thing?
I've never been in a cover band. I didn't. First of all, I didn't know any. We were just kids. I was like 15 and started just playing in clubs, and we just thought, boy, you just write your own songs and go play them.
That's great. I love that. I wish I would have done that, you know, but everybody was like, no, covers, man. You got to play covers. It's the only way that the bars will book you. And I'd be like, right. That sucks. That's the road to nowhere.
Yeah. Well, bars... I mean, I wasn't old enough to get into one in the first place, so it was parties and, you know, you play Blood, that's where you go to be rock star.
Mm-hmm.
Lars didn't come into it at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think Jimi Hendrix, talking about him, he was meant to do that, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was born to do that. And I believe I was too. And I knew I had a destiny a long time ago, and I just knew it. You know, I lost track of what we're talking about.
we were mentioning that, you know, you weren't doing covers,
right? So I could never really learn anything note for note because I just didn't do it well. So I would get it close enough so it sort of sounded like it, and then just fake it, you know, because the details weren't that important to me. I was aiming for a deeper target.
So it was more feel and, for you.
Yeah, well, emotion had to get out.
Yeah.
You know? If I'm not feeling it, you're not going to feel it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to listen to music that doesn't move me.
Yeah.
So I don't want to make it either. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's just, it's something so precious to me and so connected just with everything that I have far too much respect for it to not, you know, I have to steward it, you know.
Mm-hmm. No, I hear you. You know, and it's funny too, because like I was going to say in the Burning Tree stuff, you know, there's a glimpse in there of who you are now. There's that, you know, that nuclei, if you will, of who you are now. You know, but it was very different than what you know, literally. I mean, the songs were very different to what was going to come.
Yeah. Well, my exposure to different styles of music was very limited up to that point. You know, I didn't have... it was really widened my palate when I met the Robinsons, because their father had an amazing record collection. And so they grew up with, you know, Otis Redding. I'd never heard of Otis Redding.
Yeah. Right.
Like, I was very fixated on the British invasion kind of guitar hero thing, and outside of that, you know, LA isn't really, for it being the music scene, or it was, there wasn't really a very great music scene here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people didn't jam together in bars, and people didn't play in each other's band. It was a giant contest to win the record contract.
Mm-hmm.
So there wasn't really a community so much as I saw it later, you know, in other towns. Mm-hmm. So I think that has to cross over with people's record collection and their... Anyway, he had great taste, and they had a great palette. My palette was very limited at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And so since then, hopefully my palette's widened, you know.
Yeah. So when you started...
You get your ass kicked a bunch of times, and you know, certain things float to the top, certain things die away.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So, do you think that you're a really good, you know, basket weaver, as far as what you do with another guitar player in the room? Do you feel like that's where you really kind of honed that skill when you started working with them?
I mean, I've always had myself in a lot of different musical situations, and I'd play with other bands and as often as I could, A, because I loved doing it, and B, it kept me interested learning new music, and okay, well, how do I fit in here, and, you know, find my place in certain situations.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until a couple of years ago that I heard this, you know,
Yeah.
For five people, you play a fifth of what you maybe think you should. You know?
Right, absolutely, yeah.
But that's narrowed. That had to be learned a little bit because I was running a trio. You know, I was doing it all.
Yeah, you have it. Was, you have...
I was ready to go back to do that because it's really interesting to me to have a conversation with somebody rather than to just be out there all by myself.
Yeah, having to fill in all the holes.
Yeah, and just, you know, when you jam with somebody and you play, it's an intimate thing. You get mm-hmm. to learn a lot about each other, and there's relationships start developing without words. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little harder to get that with a three-piece.
Yeah. No, for sure.
Yeah, you have to be very big and obvious and on all the time. Yeah.
Right. Well, and that's where Hendrix was able to make that happen and fill in the holes, but still create that intimacy. But that's hard. Not everybody can do that.
Yeah. It's a lot of work.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot of work.
I like them both. You know what I mean? I like to switch it up to keep myself interested and on point. You know?
Yeah, and also challenge you. You know, because both settings are challenging. You know?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's harder actually to fit in than it is to be, you know, the main guy.
I totally agree with you. Yeah, because it's like, okay, you really have to make a conscious effort, both players, to complement each other and not squelch each other.
Yeah.
That's the whole thing.
Yeah, it's the more I've learned how to play music, it really is because I've gotten better as a musician strictly because I've become a better listener.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
I know for years and years that's probably why so many people had to listen to me because I was obnoxious for years, you know? to learn, like, oh, man, you really have to listen harder than you play, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
To create that conversation, because not only do you not want to play over what somebody else has done and it doesn't compliment, you also have to leave some space for nothingness to go in between, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And one thing's I
air it out.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And one of the things that I noticed when you were playing with those guys also was there was a seamlessness to it in that you couldn't tell who was doing what. And that would be very frustrating for someone like me who was trying to pick out parts. You know, so I'd be like, I can't figure out who's playing what.
Yeah. Well, man, that's the good stuff right there.
Yeah. You know, it's...
I just saw Neil Young a couple months ago at the Forum, you know, and he had Promise of the Real, Lucas Nelson's band,
mm-hmm.
backing him up, and it was so unbelievable. It was one of the best concerts I've been to, and because, you know, they had three guitars going.
Wow.
Totally different styles. Each one of them. And so at times you could hear what they were individually doing. And mm-hmm. other times it was just this ancient, you know, smoldering, boiling pot of harmonics, you know, that just sounded like one big ancient guitar or something. You know, it was fantastic.
That's cool.
Yeah.
There's an incredibly underrated guitar player too, is Neil Young.
Who's that?
Neil Young.
Oh, yeah. Well, people who don't get a guitar playing don't get a singing either.
True, yeah. Yeah, I guess that could go for Dylan and Zappa.
Yeah. Anybody really, really great and honest and straightforward, you know, is going to be a little hard to
mm-hmm.
swallow for a lot of people because... Mm-hmm. Frankly, people don't want to be pushed into feeling or thinking anything very often.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. Also, One of the things I noticed that after you left those guys and you started playing with, you played with a lot of different folks. I noticed that there was another echelon of growth in your playing that happened. I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it was because you didn't have those limitations on you that you had when you were with the Crows.
Well, if you're talking about like my solo records, then I would say yes.
Well, even with Ben Harper too, right? I mean, don't you think? That pushed you in another direction.
I think he gave me a good amount of freedom in his scenario. He likes, at least he did, at the time, from where I came from, he liked a really tight ship, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it was pretty orderly, and it was pretty... it was just pretty thought out, you know?
Right.
Burning Tree, and like I spent years and years, all my years, just sort of winging it and going for it. So I was a little bit of a wild card for Ben, maybe. But we found a mutual place we could both live. I learned to, you know, whoa, hey, I got to find my place here.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I mean, I grew up a little bit too. Like I said, you get your ass kicked. I had been through some shit.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
It grew me up a little bit.
Yeah. I actually wanted to talk to you a little bit about your solo discs, particularly. I have my favorites. My all time favorite right now is Weary and Wired. Where were you at mentally? Because I got a lot of questions about this record, because this was a record that I would put on and I would try to cop licks, of course, but more than anything, it was a record that I wanted to jam to, just jam along with, play along, and play my own shit on top.
Cool.
And it was such a blast to play with, and I hadn't heard it in a while, and then I knew that you and I were going to do this, so I pulled it out and I started to play over it, and I found myself finding myself in that same groove, finding myself in that same place of being able to play that stuff that I was playing on top, that I was creating on top. So,
cool.
Where was your head at when you recorded this record? Where were you at?
We had done the reunion tour, and I got offered a record deal, for two records. And it was pretty difficult to find the time to be able to do anything outside of what the Crows were doing at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So it got put off for a little while, and it was a little frustrating. And so, you know, I was in the situation, kind of just deteriorated, and I made the decision to stay home and be home instead of being gone all the time, and, mm-hmm. and make a record and go from there.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a time of a giant boost of creativity, and I'd been playing every day, you know, with the reunion tour, and so I was really fired up. And then to have Burning Tree back together, you know, it was kind of a Burning Tree record, really. And it was, I don't know where I was at, really. I was just writing songs, you know. I just loved playing. I think I got myself, that was kind of the end of another period of, like, a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to Ryan Bingham and that record and tour, and it was a very creative time.
Yeah, it's such a great record, man. I mean, just first off, just to jam to Greasy Chicken is just a fucking blast to do that. And then you get this, the last track on the record, The Big Callback, which is just this cool, funky. I mean, and you, I love how you're weaving in and out of styles, you know, throughout the whole record. You know, there's rock songs on there, there's blues songs, there's funk, there's R&B, and then you've got this song, Currents, which has these beautiful, jangly open chords, and I'm like, oh my God, what the hell is going on here? I love that song so much, and it was one of those records that I put in my car, and you didn't care how long the ride would be.
Yeah.
You know, I just play it. I play it again. I'll play it again. How long is the ride? Doesn't matter. I got this record in the car.
Yeah.
So.
That's great.
Yeah, it's a special record for me, and it was a real gift for me. I really love it.
Oh, that's great. Thank you.
And you followed it up with the Neptune Blues Club, which is similar in vibe. It seemed a little more polished, though.
It was a totally different. Total, everything was different about it except me. it was an upright bass, and it was essentially two drummers, and it was, you know, harmonica players, and I just came out of Damning. You know, we recorded that record in 2 days, and I lied and said I had songs and was just making them up as we went. And then I'd go, yeah, that's a song. And I'd go home and, you know, I wrote a bunch of lyrics one night. And just, it was totally on the fly, you know.
Seriously? That's amazing.
Oh, yeah. Because I only had a couple of days. I was going to go out with Ryan Bingham, and I needed to turn the second record in. And anyway, it was a blast.
It's killer. I love Lockdown Tight. It's got such a swagger to it. I love that track.
Yeah. It's a fun record.
Yeah, it's definitely a great record.
Yeah. Well, this last record I just made is the Neptune Blues Club again, but it's pared down to what I call the core four. It's just four of us, you know, the original guys that played without the extra percussion and an extra harmonica player.
Right, and your son's on here again?
He was going to be, and then he couldn't make it, so he wasn't there. So it's just the four of us playing, and there's a couple people that were up studio, like an engineer at Sanglin, and a percussion player did come in.
Right.
We went up to San Francisco to Tiny Telephone and recorded in a fantastic studio that's all old gear and analog and tape and, you know, all the good stuff, great microphones.
Cool.
And John Vanderslice, who runs it, owns it. He's incredibly talented, and it was just a blast to go take that trip and make it.
And we're going to get this record in a couple of months, few months?
I'm hoping so. It's just about, I think I mastered it today. And,
cool.
The artwork is coming together, and so when it's all together, the LP, the vinyl places, manufacturing center, like some are 6 months, 8 months behind.
Wow.
They're taking orders at all. So we'll have to see how quickly I can get it done.
Wow. And it's called The Vulture.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's back to, you know, it's more back to, it's a raunchy record. It's fun.
Oh, you're getting me excited. You know, there's a record that got by me that I really didn't know about, and I've been kind of immersing myself in it, and it's the Fuzz Machine record.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What was going on there? That is such it's wild, that record. That the track track Bluebird Street is outrageous.
Yeah, I love that record. That was at the end of a year touring, Elijah, my son, was with me, and Muddy was with me from Braintree, and then we had just a drummer, and we'd been on the road all year long, and I was doing everything for the first time, you know, driving and tour managing and, you know, just doing all of it.
Right.
You know? And I wrote some songs while we were on the road, and we had been doing them a little bit, and we had come to the end of the tour, and I kind of got a feeling that we weren't really going to play again together. And so I asked everybody if, when we got home, could you take a day off and come into the studio and give me two more days, and we'll record these songs, these new songs we've been doing. So that's really that. I mean, it's pretty much everything's just the way we were doing it live. Because we just kind of came in and did a set, really. And I never put it out, like, onto iTunes or, you know, just sort of let it slide out there. And I love it. You know,
it's a killer record. Like, folks, you can get Mark Ford's Fuzz Machine record on Bandcamp. That's where it's at right now.
And I think it's Mark Ford Music at Bandcamp.
Yeah, yeah. And you can get it there, and you can get it for $10. I mean,
yeah,
that's a deal.
Yeah,
it's a killer record. The guitar playing on there is so raunchy, and in many respects, I get on some of the tracks, I get a Neil Young vibe.
I love Neil. He's kind of like, he's got his finger plugged into the pure source. You know, it's a straight dose.
Well, you know what I think it is? He, even at this age, he still has angst.
Oh, yeah. He's still an old hippie pissed off at, you know, you know, unrighteousness. And, you know. And I got to tell you, man, I mean, that show at the Forum literally was one of the best concerts I've ever seen. I've seen Neil a bunch.
Yeah.
And it was just, it worked. You know, he had those young guys behind him, getting him to do songs he hadn't done since the 70s, and just, he played for 3 hours and went way over Kirby at the Forum, and it was just, it was spectacular. And I'm like, man, look at that. You know, that's my Muddy Waters, you know?
Yeah, right? For sure. What does that say to you in regards to, I mean, he's at this age and he's still doing that and he's still putting out that amount of energy. Does that give you hope?
Oh, yeah. I mean, because, you know, as soon as you stop the fight, you're going to wither away. It's beautiful to me to see a 70-year-old man up there.
Yeah.
With so much energy and so much passion.
Yeah.
And you don't see that many of them. And I realized this when I was, we were doing the Crows reunion. One time, I don't look out in the audience that often because it just distracts me. You know, and I lose my place. I get out of this sort of, you know, head trip that happens. But I look out and I'm like, who are all these? Like, I thought to myself, who are these old people here at this show? And I'm like, wait a minute. These are our peers that grew up.
Yeah.
And I'm still feeling like I'm 17 playing music.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking it up on stage, and I'm looking at other people who maybe weren't as, I don't know, I think that following passionate life is, keeps you very young. And,
yeah.
You know, it may not be the easiest route, but, or the safest route.
Yeah.
Well, keeps you fighting for sure.
Yeah, and it's like you said earlier, you know, it really comes down to feel. It's all about if you're not feeling it, then, yeah, I mean, you said you took a break from music for a while because you weren't feeling it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I can't put people on. I don't have it in me.
Yeah. So what's it like, I mean, this is such a unique opportunity to be in a band with your son. What's that like?
That's incredible. You know, he had gotten in trouble at school just before I did that reunions and pros, and so I was going to New York for 6 weeks to rehearse and do the warm up gigs and then do the ballroom gigs, and so I'm thinking, like, he's 15, he's out of high school and he's bored. I said you're coming with me, stay out of trouble, you know. And so we got to hang out in the hotel room for 6 weeks together and trip around New York City, and he got to watch the whole thing sort of come alive just as he was really getting into music and getting bummed with his peers around the neighborhood. He was so much better than anybody. He was very frustrated. So then he got to come with me and see this thing happen and just get totally turned on. And then so after the Weary and Wired record, Fuzz Machine is basically me touring the Weary and Wired record. And then in the process, I wrote songs. But when I went on tour for that record, I told my friend, I wasn't planning on bringing another guitar player, but I lied to him. And I said, look, I got to pay somebody to do this. Why don't you go with me and be my other guitar player, and I can't treat you any different. I'll pay you the same, and you'll learn what it's like to be in a band. You'll have a job, and you'll be playing music. So I think he was 17 when we left, something like that. But I got to teach him dad stuff.
What an incredible...
In the context of music, you know, I realized there's a lot of life lessons to teach.
Yeah.
In music, using musical terms, you know, teaching life lessons without even them knowing it. It was really cool for me.
That's such an incredible gift.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's very old, you know, the son out with the father in the field, kind of.
Yeah, oh, yeah. But wow. Wow.
Yeah, it is. He's so talented. I mean, he's got a new record coming out, too, that is really, really, really good.
That's great. I love it. I love it. I love that you were, I mean, just the osmosis, you know, because like in the video for Dream 26 on the Holy Ghost record, that's him as a baby, right?
Yeah.
That's trippy, man.
Yeah.
And then he's there and he's playing guitar and he's doing background vocals.
Yeah.
That is great, man.
Yeah, it's cool. Making music with your family is really special.
Yeah. That is beautiful. I love it. I love it. So with the new record, when the new record finally comes out and everything else, you're going to be out on tour to support it?
Yes. Okay. We got some shows. I thought the record was going to be ready a little earlier, and so we started booking shows in May.
Mm-hmm.
So we're just going to go and do the Northeast, kind of a handful of shows, and then hold up a little bit until the record's out and, you know, make sure everything makes sense.
Yeah.
Do it right.
So
I'm going to do,
go ahead,
hopefully festivals here and there until then. So, yeah, I'm excited to get up playing again.
So with these string of shows that you're doing now before the record comes out, are you playing tracks from the record?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's my main, you know, I'm excited about it, so I want to get out and play it.
Mm-hmm. Cool. I had a couple of questions I wanted to ask was, you know, when I hear you use the wah-wah pedal, to me, I've only heard two guitar players like this. I mean, I guess Hendrix, too, but yeah, I guess so. So three guitar players that I've heard that use the wah like as if it's not just, oh, it's just this pedal that I'm stepping on, or it's just this effect that I'm using. It's an instrument enhancing my instrument. And that's you, Hendrix, and there's this guitarist by the name of Marcus King. I don't know if you're familiar with him or not.
No.
But talk about the wah pedal for you and what it, I mean, is it one of those things where you look at it as that, or is it kind of not even a thought, or it's just kind of an impulse?
Well, at this point it is, just because it's, you know, so much stuff after so many hours, 10,000 hours.
Yeah.
Becomes part of it becomes muscle memory, mm-hmm. you know. Like I think to myself, oh, you know, tone change, and my foot goes on. You know what I mean? It's not, I keep it very simple, so it's either more or less or change the tone somehow. Whether either be on the guitar or the wah. I mean, the wah is essentially a really bitchin' tone knobs.
Yeah.
You know, so you can hit a frequency that, and zero in on this frequency that changes the whole dynamic of the plane. And, people, I think, forgot about that you could just leave it on, mm-hmm. you know, and it creates a bitch in time. But what it was meant for was to sound like a trumpet with the, you know, the mute on, wah, wah, and it just becomes more human and more vocal sounding, which as a player, that's what you want. You want to express mm-hmm. like a singer would sing.
Right.
So it makes it a little more human.
Mm-hmm.
At times, unless you're just being rude about with it. You know, it's a lot of fun and they look cool.
Yeah. So
that's the short answer.
Yeah, that's good. So I've been waiting a long time to talk to you about your gear. So run me through some of the guitars you have. There's this one Telecaster that you have that just is like, so, I mean, I don't know how old it is. It's like a blonde one.
That was 63, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love that guitar. I gave it to my son as a wedding gift.
Whoa.
So, yeah, it's in the family still.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I got some good use out of it. It was the best thing I could give him.
Yeah.
So, right now, I got a few Ashers around and a Les Paul and got my Trussard and...
Mm-hmm.
Strat and Tele. I got the basics, you know.
Yeah. Is there one in particular that's a go-to?
Well, when Bill and I finished the signature model, I got it and I decided I better figure out if I like this for real or not, you know. And so I just only played that for a while. And then got to love it so much, I didn't really want to play anything else.
Hmm.
So I've got a couple different versions of those that I vacillate back and forth with. And it's a guitar I really do enjoy playing, so
mm-hmm.
I kind of use those mostly.
So on the floor, then what are you looking at as far as pedals, the wah, and what else? You got a favorite one? You got a favorite? You got to forgive me. Me and my audience, we're gear geeks, so.
Yeah. Well, I use fuzz faces pretty much forever.
Uh-huh.
Wah on a fuzz. Wah on a fuzz, that was kind of essential all the time.
Right.
And then I started realizing getting into boosters, and so, you know, fuzzes are like a, It's like searching for the Holy Grail. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's just the perfect fuzz isn't out there. You know, and so they're fun and they keep you on your toes because they change every day and it feels so good. That's what I was always into.
Mm-hmm.
Is this touch thing that happened with especially germanium. Transistors.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the thing that I got to really love. So I'm kind of always keeping something on that pushes back a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So I never had a color sound He sent it out, and that thing is a monster. I don't have anything else to compare it to because I've never owned another one, but holy smoke. I mean, the thing is louder than anything I've ever heard, you know, and it just has this really incredible snarl to it. And that kind of was my go-to pedal for the record. And you know, and I got an old Barefoot red booster that I think was a prototype or one of the first ones that got brought to us when I was with Ben. And I love that thing. And that's it. I mean, for the record, I played out of little amps and and one pedal, you know. So it's pretty raw, this record.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, you keep talking about it, and I'm envisioning all sorts of things. I can't wait.
Yeah, it's fun. It's a trip.
And so, what are you doing live as far as amps are concerned? Fenders or?
I haven't really done a whole lot of gigging, so it's just the same. I mean, I always pretty much. The Headstrong is always around, and I've just got some other interesting things. The guy that Rocaforte sold me out of an old, you know, PA head, and I got a little Jaguar thing that's cool, and then I got a Bob Badcat just gave me Deluxe, classic Deluxe that they make, and it's, I used it at the whiskey the other night, and man, that thing is bad. It's pretty cool. I'll probably have to do backline rental amps when I do a lot of these shows until we actually are really rolling along. But I like Fenders, you know, I grew up using little Fender combos. So if I get too far away from that sound, it doesn't feel right.
Yeah, it's hard to lock in. Yeah. So
I think that's just habit.
So with the new set and everything else, and you're out there doing, are you guys doing? Is it mostly just an electric set, or are you guys going to be doing any acoustic stuff too?
No, it'll be electric.
Yeah. So you're just gonna take heads off.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that record, the Holy Ghost record, was, I loved doing it, and I loved playing it, and it's, I would get sad for myself that we didn't play very many electric songs on the last tour, just because I have so much fun, you know, purely selfish reasons, but, yeah, I just want to, I got the energy back, I'm really loving it again, so, strike while it's hot.
Yeah. Oh, Mark, I'm so excited, man. You have no idea. I hope, and I know you're going to be, we're doing this interview in the beginning of April, and I know you're going to be here on the 16th at Lambert's. Is that still happening that gig?
Yes.
Okay. I'm there.
Yeah.
I'm there. I can't wait.
I'm excited. It'll probably be a three-piece on those dates, just because it worked out that way.
Yeah.
And, but it's going to be bad. Jimmy Asher, my old friend forever, is going to play bass, and Anthony from Neptune Blues Club, who just made the record with me, it will be drumming.
That's great. Well, yeah. I'm so excited, and I can't wait. The new record's going to be called The Vulture. And folks, you can find out more about Mark and the new record and all of the other stuff. It's a really good website, by the way, at markfordmusic.com. It's Mark with a C, unlike me with a K. So
yeah, just a couple of marks on the phone.
That's it, just a couple of marks. Hey, man. I can't thank you enough for taking the time out to talk to me, man. I've wanted to talk to you for such a long time. I'm sorry for geeking out on you, and gushing. But I got to tell you, you are a huge influence, and I just love the way you play, man.
Thank you very much.
And I just keep us posted, man. We'll tell the world whatever's going on.
I will. So maybe I'll see you in May.
Yeah, man. I'll see you there. I'll be there on the 16th.
Cool.
All right, man.
All right.
Thank you very much. Yeah. We'll see you.
Bye-bye.
All
right, bye-bye.
Well, there you have it, my interview with Mark Ford. Great guitarist, folks. If you don't know his work, you should really check it out. He is he's a great guitar player, great songwriter. You know, and he plays, and I don't want to say Americana, okay? I'm going to say American music, true American music. He's tapped into the vein of that very sound, and it is fantastic. So there you have it. All right, well, we got to get out of here. I hope you enjoyed that. It was a blast to do. We got to get out of here, but don't forget guitarradioshow.com, guitarradioshow@gmail.com. Don't forget Adam's blog tomorrow, Moss Wright Guitars, 500 words on Moss Wright. I think you're going to dig it. It's a cool one. A lot of cool pics and some vids in there too. So you'll dig that. And we got lots of stuff coming up, man. I got to tell you, let me see this list I got over here. Let's see. Here it is. I've got, oh man, Marcus King coming up, Dave Grissom, Adam Lopez, Mike Varney. We've got Van Wilk coming up. Let me look at this other list over here. Goodness gracious. Points North, the Balkan Brothers. Oh, God. Jeff Jensen, Paul Nelson Band. Oh, man, that conversation was so much fun. And Mr. Chris Duarte coming up as well real soon on Guitar Radio Show. We're excited, and we're having a blast. And as we plow into the summer, we've got lots and lots of cool stuff coming up. So in the meantime, take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. Keep on playing. And please, please, please buy it. Don't steal it. We'll see you on the next episode of Guitar Radio Show. Peace.
I like this crowd already.
GRS Productions.
New episodes of Guitar Radio Show air every Wednesday on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Podbay, Player FM, Podomatic, and of course on GuitarRadioShow.com.